Inside Security Podcast with Martin and Steve Yvette and Little Joe. News Yankee Steve giving weekly updates. Armor guy managing the microphones. Joseph's there and sparkles while the vet's in the airport. Andy Googles Microsoft on his iPhone. A family-friendly bucket full of southern goodness. What will they be ranting about this week?
It's episode 179 of the Southern Fried Security Podcast. My name is Martin Fisher. Really glad you could join us today. With me is Steve Reagan, our obligatory news Yankee. Steve, how are things in your neck of the woods?
Rainy and windy, but hopefully it'll warm up later this week. That would be nice.
Yeah, we're actually looking at temperatures in the high 80s later this week.
You suck.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've been telling you that there are houses in my neighborhood for sale. I mean, you could make the move. Also with us is Sparkles, our fantastic doer of things, Joseph Sicoli. Joseph, in the greater Baltimore region, how are things?
We have seen the sun for the first day in 10 days. It's amazing. People are emerging from underneath their shelters and reaching up to praise the sun god.
Especially as Mercury transits. I mean, that is the sign of the day star's ultimate power.
It's true. It's nice that it's graced us again with its presence.
So,
if you don't know, we literally just set a record for like the number of rainy days in a row. So it's been kind of like that.
I just think it's funny that Martin and I are comparing weather and me complaining as usual about, his southern consistency, and suddenly you're giving like a post-apocalyptic report.
It kind of feels that way. So moving on April 26th, guys, it dropped. The DBIR came out for 2016, and it has, of course, started its own little hubbub as usual. So I do want to kind of go around the room real quick, get some quick impressions, because I think we have a lot of stuff that we want to discuss, not as much about the content of the DBIR itself, but kind of as the DBIR as a whole. So I guess, Martin, to you first, this year's DBIR, better than last year, worse? What'd you think?
I think Verizon always does a good job with the data they have, and we may get a chance to talk a little bit about the data set they have. My major two points about the DBIR are this. One is I was kind of frustrated this year that it seemed to me, and maybe this is just, I'm becoming old and curmudgeonly, but it was like every paragraph there was this forced inside joke, pop culture reference, something to make it, quote, entertaining, unquote. And it was so much that, I work in a fairly conservative organization that I could never share the entire DBIR with executives. They would look at me and go, what is this? Now, obviously, I'm going to pull data points out of it and use them to either, show that the trending that the DBIR is seeing is kind of what we're seeing, so on and so forth. But I think the most important part of the DBIR, especially this year, is if you've ever seen the movie Patton, there's a scene where George C. Scott is playing Patton, and the Americans have turned back a German tank assault. And Patton announces, Rommel, you inglorious, bastard, I read your book. For those of us who are on the blue team, we have to deal with marketing Nazis, and we need to read their book. For the next 3, 4, 6 months, and Joseph, I know you want to talk about this more, is companies' marketing departments are going to be pulling and lifting things out of the DBIR and using them with or without context to sell things to our leadership that may or may not be in line with what our program is. And we need to understand the DBIR well enough that if we see an inappropriate use of that data, we can call it out and counter it. And it's just, to me, that just feels crucially important. And it kind of ties in the last couple of episodes where we've been talking about how to use cautionary tales, how to not use FUD. This is simply maybe a more pointed example of a specific product that comes out that can be used for evil, it can be used for good, and it's your job as a security leader to make sure it's not used for evil in your organization.
Yeah, well done orchestrating the release of the DBIR after our episodes. I think that was pretty well done overall.
I really appreciate Verizon doing that for us.
But no, you raise a really good point. And, you know, one of the things is now I've moved on from that particular role. I spent some time working in the marketing department of a vendor. And the release of the DBIR was always kind of a stressful time in the department because it kind of dictated some of the trends, the topics, the stuff that we're going to be writing about. It would dictate that for the next 2, 3, 4 months, basically to carry us into the DEF CON Black Hat season. You make a really good point, which is that this is a very great document. It's a good resource for people to have in general. And marketers know that. Marketers know that it's going to be kind of fresh in your mind. And it compared to some of the other reports that marketers pull from, like the Pokemon reports or things like that, it's a step up from that, but it's still used for those marketing purposes.
Absolutely. I mean, statistics can be used to quote, prove, unquote, anything you want, right? And if you lift some of these statistics out of context, yeah, I mean, and marketers do that. That's their job. Their job is to create a convincing story that will cause you to spend cash on their product or service. And I get that. So we need to be prepared to help tell that story to folks who don't have and probably won't have the knowledge required to really accurately process that data.
Exactly. So, Steve, did you get a chance to kind of read through it? Did you have some thoughts about the DBIR?
So when I first started writing, I used to get really excited about this report because it would help shape like the type of news topics, and you can get a good barometer as to what's going to be worth covering for the rest of the year and early into the next year. And like you two had pointed out, you know, the marketing people pick up on the stats and they run with it like crazy and you get all these pitches. But for the past couple of years, I've been increasingly disappointed by the report. And for the exact reasons you two have just mentioned, okay? So you've got these stats and you've got these trends that you can pick and choose to make it say whatever you want. And for some people, they're going to take some of these stats and they're going to show that, hey, look, what they're seeing in this report is what we've been seeing. So, you know, we're on the right track, or maybe we need to make some adjustments here. But now we got a problem. And I can't ignore it. Some of the data in this report is questionable. And there is some serious metric problems around this. And where I see the bigger problem is for the next 6 months, some of these flawed metrics are going to be used in reports everywhere. And unless you're aware of where the breakdown is, it's going to get aggregated. It'll get echoed throughout the chamber, into the boardroom, and everywhere else where people are signing checks based on not really false assumptions, but predetermined assumptions based on a data set that may or may not have been right for the report. I'm not going to judge. All I know is I've got a report in front of me with data that everywhere I look, people are questioning. And it was never like that before. It was always a really good barometer. So I don't know what's going to happen. You know, in the past couple of episodes, we've talked about how to talk about security without overselling it or hyping it or spreading fear. And at the same time, if you're using bad data, you can't help but get it wrong from the start, and eventually you are going to spread fear, even if that's not your intention. So what do you do?
Well, I think, to me, we can have lots of conversations around the quality of the data, especially some of the assertions made in the vulnerability section. And I think that's a topic for different podcasts to talk about, and they have been more or less ad nauseum. And I'm not taking a position either side on it. I think the reality is that the report's out there, and they couldn't print it if it wasn't true, and we just have to deal with the report that we have. Now, does Verizon have a quality assurance problem? Maybe. I mean, it's noteworthy that Verizon folks who did the DBIR, they've had a lot of turnover on that team in the last 12 months, and if you've ever led a team, you know, huge amounts of turnover impacts the product you generate, and I'm not trying to make excuses. Just, you know, thinking about what I've seen. But at the end of the day, Steve, your points are absolutely valid. But I think at the end of the day, when we're talking about communicating to people around us and above us in an org, the quality or lack of quality of that data really doesn't matter.
So here's a question for you, since this directly relates to what you're doing. When you look at the stats in this report, let's look at 89% of all attacks involved financial or espionage motivations. That's a pretty significant number, but yet you work in healthcare. So how often are you going to see financially or espionage-related attacks against your organization?
Remember, they're talking about motivation, right? And determining motivation is like attribution. It can mean a lot of different things. Do most of the attacks that I see, are the people doing it in hopefully to monetize whatever it is they find? Absolutely. And if you want to call that, you know, financial motivation, fine. I'm less worried about why people are doing things at an operational level than what it is they're trying to do to me.
Okay, so that leads me right to my follow-up question. No matter what your opinion is on the vulnerability side of this, the fact of the matter is they're saying that most attacks are exploiting really known vulnerabilities. In the top 10 known vulnerabilities, they accounted for 85% of successful exploits. You can't control everything that's on your network because of legacy medical equipment and things like this that may or may not be vulnerable to some of these flaws. How do you address that? How do you convey that to leadership in healthcare when they see stats like that and then get concerned?
Well, it's actually one of the things that we're consistently talking about at the hospital. As we do infrastructure refresh, as we look at new architectures, we just have this base assumption that we have a whole lot of endpoints out there that we have very limited control or visibility over. So what else can we do? And we just, you know, there's the traditional security stuff around, you know, segmenting the network, access controls. I mean, there's a whole panoply of things that you can do. But I mean, it's not like any of that is new news. I think it's more validation of what we already knew, which I think is what the vast majority of the DBIR says this year. I equate it to you looking at the police blotter section of your local newspaper, right? If all you knew about crime in your town was driven by the blotter, your assumption is that everyone's getting a DUI, right? Because that makes up probably 80% of most, you know, local paper police reports. There's a dog barking at 3 a.m. And that's happening because those are it's the same people who are committing the crimes and they're getting arrested over and over and over again. If you're in the DBIR, by definition, you had a security failure. So the people who are doing security right, who are upping their game, who are forcing the adversary to go to an easier target, don't wind up in the data set of the DBIR. And which is why Verizon is extremely candid about the biases and the predispositions of their data set. But if you think through it, it's the same things every year because 100% of everyone hasn't fixed all those problems yet. I just don't know how much more you can say about that.
Actually, I think that's pretty much the gist of it right there. You can take what you've got and do what you can. You can't control everything.
Especially the adversary. I mean, I can guess what they're going to try to do, and the DBIR kind of gives me a menu of what I might be up against. And I think it's one of many data points that should influence how people think about doing security in their organization, but you don't control the adversary.
Yeah, I do have one gripe, though, that I think you two will agree with. There's a stat note here that says basic defenses continue to be sorely lacking in many organizations. And that really irks me because no two organizations are alike. So what you and I consider basic defenses, Joe's not going to consider basic because it's a completely different environment for him.
I think there's some InfoSec 101, right? Everyone should be patching their stuff. Everyone should be should be reviewing logs. Now, how they review logs and how they patch could be vastly different from place to place. I mean, someone may want to spend, well into seven figures building an ArcSight sim. Some folks may, you know, find an open source tool works for them to do their log monitoring.
That's where I was going. That's what I meant by that. It's right. How they go about it.
Right. And so to me, the basic security controls are about capabilities. Can you patch your stuff? Mm-hmm. Can you detect when things are happening on your network? it's those basic things that I think a lot of people don't do well, whether or not they're using, you know, $1 million blinky light or you know, getting open source software from wherever. This is one of those things I prefer to talk about. I try to be technology agnostic in most of the stuff I talk about these days, and I talk more about building business capabilities. What should I be able to do? And then there are people on my team. I have an architect. I have engineers. I have analysts who then take that capability that, you know, exercising my great wisdom and forethought, say we need to be able to do X. Then I don't talk about technology. I talk about what we be able to have to do, and here's the likely budget, and here are the things I think it needs to work with. And then I have people who are a lot smarter about the technology than me come up with architectures and blueprints and roadmaps and implementation plans, and then they come to me and say we need, you know, $60 billion to make it happen. You know, then it's my job to take that uphill and convince my boss I need $60 billion to build this thing that, you know, we said we needed. So I think a lot of folks are missing just some of those basic capabilities, and they're just not executing on it very well.
So let me ask this. I'm kind of getting a sense from the discussion here that the three of us are kind of about this year's DBIR. For myself personally, I read it as kind of a curiosity, as kind of a, hey, let's get a sense of kind of the trends that we looked at over the last year. And because, you know, I have a more technical background, like I can dig down into some of these things that an executive might not be able to. So let me ask you guys, what will be the value of the DBIR to you this year? Will there be value? To me, like I said, it's a data point. It might be something that I use or I can reference back to because there is data published on something like this. But particularly, Martin, I want to get your take on, is there some value? Are you going to be referring back to this over the course of the year, or is it just kind of a maybe not?
Well, I want to point to a different Verizon product on the same data set. And they did, gosh, this was probably 3 or 4 months ago, they released case studies based on the various data they have. And they were geared towards some very specific verticals. And I think the ability to talk about case studies and being able to take the various data and not talk about it at a macro level, but talk about it in a more micro-focused way, that has tremendous value. I think the macro view 9 years in, I think it's lost a little bit of its uniqueness. I mean, when Verizon first did this 9 years ago, we were all agog that anyone would anonymize the data of the people that they did incident response for and give it to the world for free. It was just, you know, what sort of arcane magic is this? And I think a lot of folks have jumped on board. If you look at the number of contributors to the DBIR this year, it's a pretty amazing set of participants. But I think that because there is so much data and there's so much more transparency around it, the DBIR has been a victim of its own success. I think if they can pivot to where they're creating more actionable data, where they're you know, they're slicing the data and giving you a slightly different view of it, either by vertical or whatever interesting way they can do it, that's where I think the new value of the DBIR is. Because I think we get it now. We get this big view, and I don't think that the advice on the controls you need or any of the – there won't be any big shifts in what the threat actors are doing to us anytime soon. But the way the threat actors are acting across different verticals or that could be really interesting. So long answer to a short question. Sorry.
No, it's good. Steve, how about you?
I actually verbatim damn near agree with what Martin just said. I mean, I can't really think of any other counter argument or anything more relevant to add. That's odd, but seriously, I agree with him completely.
Yeah. I think the additional value add for you, Steve, is you'll be able to play some sort of drinking game or bingo game as you start seeing story pitches where people are doing really crappy references to actually irrelevant DBIR data to try to get your attention.
So, I mean, that would be fun, but the problem is I am positive somewhere in the terms and conditions or general rules of employment, I have to remain sober for a large volume of the day while I'm working. I Now, don't quote me on that. I might be wrong, but
I'm talking about drinking. I was drinking water, you know, just keeping you hydrated.
Oh yeah, that's great. So you're trying to make me overdose on water? That's awesome, Martin. Thanks.
Excellent. Guys, unless we have something else that we kind of wanted to cover in about the DBIR, I think that kind of sums up this year's report. Martin, thoughts?
I think it does. And like I said, I hope the Verizon folks maybe, you know, get a slightly less stand-up comic pace to the report for next year. And again, I think I really hope that they take that case study product they created and pivot on that some more, because I think there's huge value in that. I'm not saying stop the DBIR. I'm not one of those people saying, you know, should they hang up on the DBIR? No, I don't believe that at all. But provide people different analyses of that data would be hugely beneficial.
A fun exercise that I know a couple of executives and business leaders do, and I use those very broad generic terms because I don't want to name names or the companies they work for, but they take all of the collected reports for the year and compare and contrast. And then from that data set, they actually form their own internal metrics and trends. And if you've got the energy to do that, it might be something worth looking at.
Yeah, it would take a pretty mature organization to be able, I think, be able to do that effectively. But if you can, there's probably some gold to be found there. So I think with that, I'm thinking it's time to wrap up. This is Martin. If you are interested in telling me how wrong I am about what we talked about, you can find me on the Twitters at ArmorGuy. The podcast Twitter feed is at SFS Podcast. Joseph, how can people talk to you?
If you want to get a hold of me, you can always find me on Twitter at Jay Sicoli.
And then Steve, other than the prodigious amounts of content that you provide to CSO Online, if someone really just wanted to tell you how awesome you were and that they were going to name their firstborn child after you, how could they talk to you?
Well, if you wanted to tell me all that, that would be cool. But I'm more interested in hearing about how you think Martin's wrong. And if so, you can find me on Twitter. I'm SteveD3.
Is that why you're following my wife on Twitter now?
I am.
Find out all the ways that I'm wrong?
Yeah. Okay.
Well, one thing that a little bird told me is for those of you who normally be ending your podcast listening now, that there may be some audio bonus shorts from the failed attempt last time to record this episode. So stay tuned, enjoy. Thanks very much, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Hello, and welcome to the Southern Fried Security Podcast. It's episode number 179, and I am your host, Joseph Sicoli. Martin isn't able to be with us today. I think he's taking a pilgrimage to find the best Waffle House or something along those lines. He'll return to us eventually, probably wiser than he is now. I am joined tonight by my good friend, Andy Willingham. Andy, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing all right. I was thinking if Martin's not wiser, he'll at least be a lot fuller. So.
Yeah, the funny thing is I've really only been to a Waffle House like 3 or 4 times in my life.
Oh, dude.
He's not here, so he can't say anything against me.
Yeah, they're amazing. It's amazing the I won't call it the quality of the food. We'll call it the flavor of the food that you can get from some very interesting people.
Speaking of interesting people, we're joined tonight also by our good friend Steve Reagan. Steve, how you doing tonight?
I don't know what to make of that. That was. I'm doing all right, man. I pay a lot of money for internet, and apparently, it only works about half the time. So, you know.
Well. That was amazing.
That's great. I know he did that on purpose.
Oh man.
I was gonna. I was. And I was nope, just about.
He's
to say,
gone.